5. It's a good day is over, but here on Post Show Recaps, we are just getting started. My name is Grace, but of course I'm not alone. It's always a good day when I'm with someone who I want what she wants. It's Dr. Amanda. Amanda, how are you doing?
Oh, that's so sweet of you, Grace. I'm great. I was just consulting my notes app where I have jokes for the podcast.
Perfect.
Yes. Uh-huh. It says here to be self-deprecating, e.g. James Corden.
Yeah, example. Very important one I have for you is avoid race-based humor.
I'm going to try. I can't make any promises. Always punch up, never punch down, no politics. Puns are safe, thank goodness, Grace, or else the Post Show Recaps network would be taken down.
Did you catch the little note? Because he's blocking it, but I think I understand that I think passive aggressive homes is what the pun joke is there. Yeah, I think if I try to figure out how it's, because he is blocking it, I think.
Yeah, his thumb is over that. Yeah, and then we do hear his, your energy bill will be cheaper than my haircut. That was one of the ones he had prepared.
My favorite from the list, I think, is pop culture funny, e.g. Pepsi commercial, or never try to be funny, I think, are my two favorites on the list.
He's trying so hard to never try to be funny.
Another episode of The Curse, a very polarizing show. Mm-hmm. Amanda, did you catch the Curse media rounds this week?
Oh, I did not, Grace. I would love for you to
update
me on that.
Could you just search Benny Softy? I don't know which show he's on. I only saw clips of this. I believe it's The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Can you just search for an image of that? So we can get your reaction live on the pod.
Okay. Let me see. Oh my goodness. Was he a living statue?
Yeah. So I don't know. I've watched the full episode, but he basically comes out and he's like, oh yeah, I was just doing some street performing. And then they don't mention it ever again.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you're, obviously this is an audio medium. We're not. You know, progressive to be on the YouTube yet for some of our other shows, but not for this one. He is fully silver and he's like one of those statue people you see, like street performers that you would see. And he's perfectly silver and he just is talking to Jimmy Fallon about his the television show he produced and stars in.
I have to watch this clip. Yeah, it can't be comfortable to have all of that makeup on.
No, not at all. I mean, it does scare me a little bit. I know, isn't the whole story, the stuff that they use on the Tin Man was, actually, poisoned.
Yeah.
That man.
Yeah.
I know that's probably, super safe, whatever material they use.
Wasn't that a plot line in Shining Girls, Grace?
I think it was. Wow. I was not expecting Shining Girls to get mentioned today.
No, never. Yeah. I'm never expecting it to get mentioned.
I haven't read that book. I just gotta say. All right. Okay, episode 5, halfway through the show, Amanda, how are you feeling about The Curse so far? How do you feel about this episode?
I'm feeling great about The Curse. I think that this is probably the first episode that felt like what I was expecting this show to be, seeing some of the trials and tribulations of them trying to produce this reality television show. We have some very nice self-referential nods to some of Nathan Fielder's own work, asking a mother if she'll give her baby to somebody else. we can't have the child be an actor. Well, I'm not asking the baby to act. So this was, I think, more than any other episode, the one that comported with my pre-show expectations were. But really, I'm finding myself so fascinated by the Whitney character. I think we get a lot more Whitney in this episode than we do of Asher. And she is just one of the most interesting characters I've seen on television in a while. I'm still very much enjoying the journey that we're on. How about you, Grace? How do you feel about this one?
Yeah, I really like this episode. I think that there's been stronger episodes, but it's everything is to use a baseball metaphor, they're hitting doubles, triples, home runs each time for me personally. So nothing is a strikeout so far. The other thing I was you were talking about influence from other shows. And I believe the other week I was like, you know, when we first talked about the show, I was like, oh, is this the evolution of the rehearsal? Like, this is Nathan Fielder's evolution from the rehearsal. And I totally forgot. And this came up on my like Twitter feed. There's a second season of the rehearsal coming. Like, it got renewed for a second season.
Oh, wow.
Which I totally forgot. Yeah. I think it's like last summer after the show aired, it got renewed. So that show is coming back. So whatever progression or evolution we think is happening, we actually need to keep in mind that like he's not done with the rehearsal either.
Yeah.
So I think that's just interesting to note.
Fascinating.
Yeah, but I totally agree. This is a pretty big character study of Wit, who I'm watching another show right now, and I was complaining this week. I was like, I just need to know what this character wants. And I feel like we're close, but I don't really actually know what Whitney wants. I know she wants like to be perceived as perfect, but in terms of like, what does she actually want out of this whole project? I don't really, I think she wants to. I think she wants money and a client, like money and props for being a superhuman, you know?
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And I think we get a lot of insight into those two things being completely at odds this episode.
Well, I think that we can talk about this and dig into this quite a bit more, because I think that ultimately what Whitney wants, and, you know, maybe we're putting the cart before the horse a little bit, is, you know, she's like, her parents became very successful in real estate, doing it like the bad way, being slumlords.
Right.
And I think in her mind, she imagines that she can have all of that success and then still be like extremely virtuous and seen as somebody who's doing good for the community and good for the environment and all of that. So lots of exciting stuff to get into here.
All right. So we open with these two people who are being filmed for the show, and they're pointing to features of the house. Actually, Dougie says, actually do more of the pointing, less talking though. Your actual opinions about what's happening, we don't need the audio. So just shush.
This and is maybe, Dennis and Lucinda, who we'd heard so much about.
Yeah. And Dougie says, maybe look skeptical. And Whit says, maybe don't look skeptical. Maybe look really pleased with your home that you bought with money to me.
Yeah, Dougie and Whitney with their like slightly different agendas. Dougie, I think, is like kind of phoning this in at this point. Like, he got the show picked up, but he's like doesn't seem that excited about it. Dennis is already sweating profusely at the beginning. Yes.
Poor Dennis. I feel really bad for Dennis. Sweating. All right. So Whit and Ash are sort of like, they're playing around. They're very excited about the show. They're taking a selfie. She jokes about how she could like hold the camera and the boomstick operator. And there's this back and forth that is eventually they both reveal that they're joking, but it's basically a back and forth about the worker joking, like, I quit, you don't appreciate me. And then she's like, well, that tone of voice, like, don't laugh in my face. Like, you need to be careful about what you say. And both of them like immediately reveal they're joking. But are they joking?
Great. This is so awkward. And this is such a perfect encapsulation of everything that Whitney is bringing. It's like, she imagines that these people who are basically working for her, that they have this like super jokey camaraderie where they can like pretend she's being the boss. Oh, how funny. Like, the boss is like reprimanding somebody, and that, you know, but she's so cool that obviously she couldn't mean it, and they like can give it back and forth. And she's like, she's so sort of delighted by how funny it is, but she is in a relative position of power to this guy. Yes. So like, of course he has to play along and make it seem like Whitney's being hilarious. And if she does switch tones and does reprimand him, then that could mean he loses this gig, and that's not funny at all. So I think it's this really good example, and there's a few of these, of Whitney just kind of failing to understand her like relative privilege or position in the world that she inhabits, and trying to act like, oh, I'm just so cool and laid back, and everybody's going to love me and see me as completely on their level.
It's funny because last week, Asher's like, are you going to take the comedy course? And she's like, no. And then this is like the least funny thing. Like, I've worked for people who are like this. So maybe not like my exact boss. I've always been pretty lucky with who my bosses are. But you know what? There's like, you're like, oh, that's a joke you maybe don't make. Mm-hmm. And the other piece of it is like, when someone's joking, but you can feel that there's so much truth behind their what they're saying. And they think it's almost like they're like testing the waters for the reaction, and then they'll decide whether or not it's like fully a joke or not, you know? So that's how I feel about Whitney, where she's like, not that she's like, but she just doesn't, there's so much truth, I think, in how she actually feels mm-hmm. as she's like reprimanding this man for not showing her any respect.
Right.
You know? Yeah. All right. Whitney, there's this issue of the, of a clause, a piece of paper that everybody who buys a house is supposed to sign, which is support the tribe. Mm-hmm. And Asher is worried that they'll think it's like, you know, part of the deal that if they don't sign it, they won't sell them the house, which of course is not true. But yes, also they do have to sign the piece of paper.
Well, there's a little bit the house. Of a, like a deliberate kind of miscommunication here because Whitney and Asher want different things. Like right. Whitney wants this to be a condition. Like you right. cannot buy the house unless you support the tribe. And this goes back to the conversation that she had with the governor of the Pueblo a few episodes ago, where he was talking about how, you know, this road is actually, you know, owned by the Pueblo and it's not owned by this, the county. And, you know, that they're being like, there's some contested ownership over the easements onto the highway. So Whitney wants to support the tribe and wants this to be a condition of owning one of her homes. Asher is principally interested in, we have to sell these homes. Like we've spent so much money building these incredibly expensive, very, very particular homes that probably extremely very few people actually want to live in. And so they need to sell the homes and put as few obstacles in front of buyers to actually buying the homes as possible. But Whitney wants to be extremely careful in curating who is allowed to live in this community. So Whitney keeps calling it a contract. Asher calls it a letter, a non-legally binding letter of support.
Mm-hmm. This is also, I love the scene where they keep asking Jose if they're being recorded. And Jose plays, kudos to the actor who plays Jose. He's playing the perfect, I think he could be listening in, but he also might be genuinely not listening in. And I really can't tell. And I think he's perfect in this role.
He might just be oiling the knobs.
Greasing the knobs. That's the thing you have to do. You have to grease the knobs. Yes, podcasters, we know you have to grease the knobs a lot. Way more than you think.
One of the most important podcasting.
Yeah, be careful if you're thinking about getting, like, I'll start a podcast. It's easy. And then all your day is just greasing knobs.
Yep.
Yeah. So
oh, don't I know it, Grace.
All right. Asher does talk to the couple. They said they were uncertain when they first heard of the home. But he asked if they're familiar with the tribe. And they've heard about this easement controversy. And she asks, like, will there be issues with the title? And he says no. So
yeah. So this is obviously something that's coming up in the news. And like these people who are considering investing in this land are like concerned about it. And, you know, we don't know exactly what these reports are, but Asher indicates that maybe they've been sensational. And like, and the concern, I guess, is if you're buying a very, very expensive home, that could the Pueblo say that actually, you know, that's our land and you could, there could be contested title. There could be this question of ownership. Yeah. So he mentions, oh, well, title insurance companies like wouldn't have done this if it wasn't, you know, if it wasn't a safe bet. But as a new buyer, like they're concerned and Dennis and Lucinda are also concerned because they had to see this on the news before Asher brought it up. So there's like a lot of kind of there's a lot of like kind of sheepishness in how this gets approached, but this is Asher wants them to sign this letter, but they just want to know that the tribe is not going to claim the land that their home is on.
All right. So we get the tour of the home as the show is being filmed, and it pretty much devolves into just jokes about how the home is a prison. About how like the toilet water comes from the sink. They wonder whether it's like a prison, but at least it has a lid unlike a prison. Prisons are one of the most energy efficient systems, you know, but why would I pay this much to be in a prison? They go to the kitchen where she is very adamant about the induction stove and how great it is, how the Michelin star chefs use it, which like then Asher tries to reignite the prison chef. And he's like,
I know,
grab your metal tray and you know the dinner is gravy and mashed potatoes or whatever. And poor Dennis is just boiling. It's hot and he would like some water.
This was like very brilliant comedy, I thought, this whole scene, because this is like the staged for the cameras version of the house tour, where you want, like, where Whitney especially wants the buyers to be so excited and enthusiastic about how great the home is, like to showcase all of the home's features. And they keep on making, like, they keep on making this prison joke, and like Asher brings it back after it died, it comes back again. And you know, Whitney is doing her like best HGTV host like tour of how wonderful everything is, while Dennis is like profusely sweating with like huge pit stains and like a growing sweat stain around his collar. And then they start talking about AC, the possibility of installing AC in the home.
Well, the beauty is that you don't need an AC unit. The house is like a thermos, just, you know, except for when you open a door or window and it takes 5 to 7 hours to equalize every time you do that, like a door or a window. It's the most outrageous, like, you know, these people, I hope they did they already buy the home? They didn't already buy the home yet, right? They're like, have they put a deposit down?
I think I think that they're in the process, but clearly they're going to end up backing out. I also like how Whitney makes the joke with the induction stove, like she puts her hand on the hot stove and burns her hand. It's like she's almost as corny and like out of touch as Asher is with the
100%.
humor.
100%. Yeah. But then also there's another where Lucinda plays along with the prison jokes again. And she's like, well, don't drop the soap because there's soap behind them in the thing. And then trying to save the episode, Whitney's like, that's goat soap. It's like, you know, the most energy efficient.
It's lovely. You're going to love this goat soap.
This whole thing. Yeah. Just like, wow, it's really hot. It's 72. Because we just opened the door. And so we need to wait 5 to 7 hours to equalize.
And then they're like, wait, you have to do that every time you open the door. And it's like, or a window. Wait, every time you open a door or a window.
Yeah.
And the range, I think, what does he say? It's like 66 to 78 degrees.
Something like that, yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but 78 is really hot.
It's pretty hot. As he's sweating. Yeah. Okay. So Whitney's really worried they're going to put in an AC unit. And she asks again about the contract. Asher can't find his phone and he finds it in possession of Dougie, who at first pretends that he thought it was his phone, even though it's a prototype. And then we quickly learn, no, Dougie was going to play a prank where he put dating apps on Asher's phone and then was going to show Whitney. And he's also eating some ice. Like, why is my phone wet? And he's like eating a handful of ice, presumably because it's very hot. But this whole thing of like Dougie trying to, the first scene where he's like, be skeptical, is like, he's very invested in the show having like conflict. He does not want this to be like completely an uplifting, happy show. He thinks that it will be better if there's conflict. And so, plus the dynamic of him trying to be like buddy buddy with Asher and to an extent Whitney, it's all just creating like the worst social dynamic, where he's like, he's creating conflict but against himself, and then adding dating apps on Asher's
phone. It's so funny. He's a more buoyant version of Dougie in this episode, I think, than in the last couple of episodes where he was like particularly kind of sad and depressing. But he's back, you know, at his old tricks, trying to create conflict between the Seagulls. And, you know, at some point he's like, when Dennis and Lucinda eventually walk away from this house and decide that they're not going to buy and there is no buyer. It's like, who is the show of, like, Vic is gone. Like, even if Dennis and Lucinda worked out, like, is this an interesting show? The much more interesting show, Grace, the show that you and I are watching is the Whitney and Asher show. And so that's what Dougie is still trying to elicit and bring out, is getting the show to shift to covering Whitney and Asher's relationship.
Is there any part of this where... I don't think the show plays into this, but, you know, the beginning, we do see, like, when when the curse happens, that's like him, like Dougie actively like filming after Asher doesn't want to be filmed anymore. Jose listening in. Is there any chance that, like, you know, and we've talked about that, I think there's a scene where Asher and Whitney are talking in one of the first two episodes and it's like filmed through like the eye hole, the peephole. And we were wondering, like, is there more to like them being filmed? A lot of the stuff is like, there's a scene, I think it's this scene where
it's coming up. Are you talking about where they're filming Asher and Whitney from inside of somebody else's home, where we see a woman just sitting on her couch?
I sure am. Yeah. So like all of this, like this idea of like eavesdropping on people, like it could feel like there's like a lot of setup here for like, wow, Dougie actually has a lot more footage and actually sold the show, because you wouldn't be friends with him. He actually went and sold the show to like somebody else who like, or to HGTV or whoever. That's like, yeah, the takedown of Whitney and Asher show. Yeah,
I think that there's.
And did you sign a contract? Yeah,
I think that they're absolutely getting more footage and more recordings of Whitney and Asher. And Whitney's obviously super paranoid about it too. Like, she wants to listen back. She's checking things. She's like making sure no recording after we say cut. So I think that that's going to come back. I think that the unauthorized Whitney and Asher documentary is in the offing.
Yeah. Okay. Whitney sees the couple in the car. This is straight out of a Nathan Fielder project, where she says, I'm just not really sure what was real and what not real in our conversation. When we were like acting and performing, but also you're actually buying this house, I just wasn't sure what was real and what was not. And so she has a contact for an HVAC, but his brother works for a company that can get one for free. But she believes that if he installs an HVAC unit from his brother, the home will no longer be a massive home.
Well, you have to imagine that whatever kind of air conditioning could possibly qualify for energy neutral, something that like would have to be extremely complicated and engineered and very, very expensive.
Probably just a windmill that you stand in front of. That's the AC of Whitney's passive home.
She has some kind of contact, but he has like, oh, he's going to get an Energy Star appliance, Grace.
The way in which she demeans, like the way she's using the language that she's using, which is like, you are part of an exclusive club and you are throwing away being part of history, is such like manipulative like language to like try to convince it to, for what, for to Whitney's reputation. Is that not like she built this thing that everybody, you know, like ruined in her estimation? Like, it's again to the point of last week where it's a Vic who's like, I thought I would get to like choose what happens in the home that I bought with my money.
Well, it's like it's a fundamental flaw in this entire premise of what she's trying to build, that she wants to create this community that only includes a very specific type of person who completely shares her values with regards to relationship with the community, relationship with the indigenous people, environmentalism, dedication to maintaining the home in the way that she thinks is important. She wants people to buy into that 100%, which is like, this is like cult level expectations. But like that premise, and then they also have to be like multimillionaires to even afford to buy these homes.
That's right. Yeah.
It's like, it's this insane premise where like, this is what you said, like, what does Whitney want? And it's, I think that it's this cognitive dissonance that she believes that, you know, she obviously grew up very, very wealthy. Her parents have made a fortune in development. And she wants to believe that she can keep all of the status that she enjoys as having come from that, and then also do that in a way where she can feel like she's doing something that's good for the environment and helping the community. And development doesn't do those things. It actually, this kind of unaffordable housing development is bad for the environment and the community. And it's like this whole like no losers thing that they talk about in the first episode, they're completely deluded in this. And so I think that this is what's Whitney is clinging to. I think it probably has a lot to do with her relationship with her parents and the fact that she is not independent and cannot like, you know, actually set out on her own and build her own thing. But you can't like have people come into this community and then control every decision that they make.
I think it's really interesting because you talked earlier, I think after the first episode, you were like, or maybe it's where we first, there's a moment where with that when Nathan is like looking for a chair, one of the early episodes, you're like, this is a really, this is one of the best shows, you know, right now talking about class.
Yeah.
And I do feel like we've been a little bit removed because the, I mean, not really actually, because we have a lot of the stuff with like Abshir, and there's like, you know, all of the stuff where they go and intrude on their home. But in these situations where, you know, they're dealing with like people who are rich enough to like afford to buy a home. And then on top of that, like one of these like passive homes, it is like the way that Whitney is trying to do good in the world, but she has no fundamental. And I think to your point, she's trying to hold on to her class. She's trying to hold on to that and make sure that it feels like, well, I'm a person who has money, but I'm doing good, without realizing how much bad she's doing in the world. I think is like, so it's super fascinating.
Yeah.
And I love where we progress in this episode as she gets fundamentally so fed up with all of the real people that we will resort to fake people. I love this so much.
Yeah.
So we do get this where she's going to try and get them to sign the contract. Mm-hmm. What if they change their mind about which land, as even though Whit and Ash are saying like they're not going to come after this land, this is what they could. And so then they hand it back. Asher tries to cut the tension by saying, let's not pull out the shanks. We want the warden to be mad at us.
Let's bring back that. And remember when we were having so much fun joking about prison.
And then I love it. She, Lucy says, she's a lot as Whitney leaves. And Asher's like, I'm going to go talk to her. But also, you have to watch your effing language. Like, you effing bitch, actually, is what he says as he's walking away. So this, like, thing of, you know, we've talked a lot about that. The dynamic of their relationship is that Whitney, I think, holds a lot more power in this relationship than Asher does. And Asher, you know, multiple times we'll see him sort of like, you know, I referenced the line at the beginning of the show. He's going to say like, no, I just love what you love, you know? And the way that Dougie has tried to be like, well, why don't you like, you know, get in a fight with her? Or like, we'll make fun of her. He's like, I'm not going to do that. And he feels very protective. This is in episode one. This is the interview with the journalist of like,
yes,
stopped asking her about her family. That's not why we're here. And so this protective side of Asher, even though in this moment, he also desperately wants to keep the sale.
Yeah. And you see that he has that capability for his anger to just snap on a dime like that. Like, I love the way Nathan Fielder plays this, because after Lucinda says she's a lot, you can see the look on his face where you think he's going to say, like, don't talk about my wife like that. And instead of saying that, he says, I'll talk to her. And then he like, as he walks away, he's like, and actually watch your language, you effing bitch.
Yeah.
So it's, Yeah. So that sale, I think, has slipped through their fingers.
So can I tell you, I mean, last night I was having a little tough time sleeping, and not to put something on to fall asleep, but I was like, I need something that I haven't watched in a while. I put on Nathan For You.
Ooh.
I started from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I kind of forgot, in the way that Nathan, I think, has slipped much more into a like straight man, like, you know, like he is feeding off of the energy of everybody else and how ridiculous everybody else. But there's a scene in episode one of that show where he gets in a confrontation with a PR expert about the poo flavor do you remember this? And he's very confrontational with this individual. And I kind of forgot that is, you know, in the show, I'm like, oh, this was the clip. The interview clip was spread around. I'm like, look at Nathan, like, acting, you know, but he has always had a little bit of this where like, if he thinks it's going to elicit a reaction, he can do it. So yeah, very fun. The scene where he's like, but he also wants to protect the sale, but then he also wants to protect his wife. And so he like, he's like, I don't know whether I should say anything. And then he decides to say something. So I just kind of love it. Yeah. Asher wonders whether maybe he says change the language of the letter. It's a little intense. And Whitney says, we're not selling to them. There's so many people who would kill to live here. How do you not see what I'm seeing, Asher? And he says, I do. I am seeing. And then Dougie suggests, why don't you just use fake buyers? We'll get fake people to come and look at the homes. Perfect.
They do it in reality TV all the time.
Well, yeah, like on that show Survivor, that's all fake, right? Those are fake people trying to, Well, the first buyer is Kara, the artist, who is from a few episodes back. She does not do what Whitney would like at all. I love that the first fake buyer, who's supposed to be the perfect embodiment of how this show will be seen as a success, and she's like, a lot of crime in this area. Like, no, don't worry, I'll put up an electric fence. Like, you don't have to worry about a security camera.
She's being so funny, and she's trolling Whitney so hard. Like, she comes in and she's like, wow, this house is like $1 million. I can never afford this. And Whitney's like, yeah, me neither. And she's just like, you're lying.
The amazing architecture piece is because that's where she was accused of where Whitney was accused of plagiarism before, right? So this is totally like Karis not doing this as like, Asher tries to defend her of like she's just being a character, but this is entirely to get under Whitney's skin, who she totally knows she does not like.
So Kara does this just to troll Whitney, and it is like she's the performance artist, and this is her performance art of like being one of the rich people who's going to buy these homes, and like, you know, and the kind of mix of what she's doing is she's like, I'm gonna have 1 million dinner parties here. Oh, we'll put an electrical fence around the house to keep the poor people out. Like, she's really, really putting on a show.
The character is pretty good character work in terms of playing the type of person she absolutely thinks Whitney would hate living in this home, but also like the worst person. It's like there's a scene. One of the scenes they leave in the preview, which I always think is really interesting as a TV viewer, of like, why did they put that in the preview? And so obviously they put them going to Kara's art exhibit because we're going to meet Kara again. But one of the scenes they do is, do you own any of these pieces? I say, yeah, we own 4. And I comment on that being, I love that line of like the guy who's there to appreciate the art. And so much of the art is about stealing people's art. And then they own her art. This line where she's like, this is a passive home. The person who like is enamored by, you know, their status, but also doesn't really understand it. You know, it's kind of, her performance is really good. Her character's good.
She nails it. She's good at what she does. And then I love that Kara like immediately becomes like best buddies with Dougie here. They have like the funniest little repartee.
I do love that we only ever come in like at the end of like there's no setup to the jokes that they laugh at is one of my favorite uses here of like it's one of my favorite comedy things of when they'll be like, and then the lamb got run over and everyone's laughing or whatever, you know? It's like my favorite. Uh-huh. Yeah. All right. So Whitney does seem to be murdered. This is where, and I forgot that they smoke outside the window. Right by the ladies watching her TV. So again, a very subtle nod to like, they just don't really care about anybody. They're going to smoke outside this lady's window. And the idea of Mark Rose, I believe, comes up as a potential buyer that they could use in the show. But Mark has a big problem. He's got an American flag with a blue line on it, signifying Blue Lives Matter.
The thin blue line.
And they need to, she believes they need to find the perfect embodiment of somebody who embodies the community on the show. She's going to drive to Santa Fe to find somebody. Not Mark Rose.
No. So they're going to go out to do this this street casting thing. She goes with Tanya, who's one of Dougie's production assistants, to go up to people on the street and ask them if they want to be on the show. But while they're on their way, Whitney actually gets a call of something important she has to attend to.
Can I just jump in very quickly? Because this is where Kara says, no, I'm good. I'll stay here. I don't need to be dropped off. And she starts smoking. And Dougie says, smoking is disgusting. She says, well, there are lots of things I find disgusting about you. And she says, at least I'll die happy. And he says, well, you know, my wife died. And she says, of smoking? And he says, no, car accident.
And Kara is like smiling so much while he's saying this.
You know, my wife died of smoking. No, correct. You know,
everybody's response is like just inappropriate. Like, smoking is disgusting. Well, I find you disgusting.
It's so fun. I can't, you know, she's into it. She loves it. I think she knows exactly who Dougie is to a degree.
Well, it's also, I love this because Whitney, like, finds Dougie like disgusting beneath her. And Whitney thinks that Kara is like, you know, the epitome of cool. And at one point she literally says this to Asher, like, this is who I need validation from. I need her validation. Right. And the fact that Kara like does not want to spend any time with Whitney at all and clearly is, you know, mocking her openly when she comes here and then decides to spend her time just hanging out, shooting the shit with Dougie. It's like such an insult to Whitney that anybody would choose to spend time with Dougie over spending time with her.
I don't think in my entire life I'll ever forget. My wife died, you know, of smoking. No, car accident. All right. Jeans have been stolen from the plaza. Fernando restrained, but then apparently, no, just blocked the path. And because he's working at the coffee shop, he is not on security duty. Mm-hmm. I do love that the storefront says jeans make people happy. I just think a slight commentary on how far capital. Sometimes you have to be like, whoa, as a society. It's a lot that we've done. Jeans make people happy. Whitney asked the employee if she's okay. Someone stole something 2 days ago. And the manager said there's a zero tolerance policy. But Whitney says people commit crimes like this. They're not hurting anyone. It's from a place of hardship. I'll give you my credit card. And if anybody takes something, just charge it. Even if they're $200 jeans. Yeah.
Yeah. And the employee here is like, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. This is a fascinating scene, Grace. I think that this is so interesting what we get from Whitney here. And this is where I'm really struggling with like how to see Whitney as a character, because like on the one hand, like, okay, so she's the landlord. She owns this property. She's renting it to this business.
Yes.
And she brought this business to this space. Like the business would not be in Española if it wasn't for Whitney recruiting these businesses to be in this space that she's giving it to them rent free. But they're still businesses and they have operating costs and they're paying employees to work there and they have inventory and, you know, they like have to protect their inventory and want to, you know, actually make sales, right? That's kind of like the idea. And this person who's like an employee who like presumably has like a real job and isn't just a prop to be there is like, you know, has some level of responsibility over the store. So yes, like with these nonviolent crimes, like I think that, you know, it's better like if police don't get involved in these things, if they don't have to, of course. But this is like a complicated socio-political situation that Whitney is like the very center of stirring up. And then she's trying to like personally reach out and be like, I'll pay for all the pairs of jeans. Like she's not presenting a systemic solution to a systemic problem that she is causing. And she's making all of these other people like Fernando and this young woman who works at the jean store, like very confused about what their role is in this system, other than being a prop for Whitney's self-esteem, because like this woman works for somebody who's not Whitney. Whitney's just the landlord who owns the store. And I'm sure that that person's like, don't let people, if people try to steal the jeans, like stop them. Yeah. It's crazy that they're selling $200 jeans in this
that's
market.
So true.
The whole thing is just doesn't make sense. And like, and Whitney has actively created this insane situation. And then she's like divorcing herself from any kind of like, oh, like I'll just explain to people how like policing practices have historically been racist. And it's like, of course you're right, Whitney, but like the real way to, you know, the real way that somebody like you can influence it is, you know, is by actually, I don't know, maybe she could have donated that money to like the shelter or to feel like, so people like had more, like there's like, and even if she doesn't do anything to actively make crime and policing and poverty better, she could choose to not make it worse. And she has chosen to make it worse, to like be one of these developers that drives people out of their home and creates like stores that people can't afford to shop at. She could not do that. So it's very much she's trying to like have her cake and eat it too. And people like this young woman who works at the jean store and Fernando are very confused by all of this.
Yeah, I mean, you make a really good point. And I think you opened it up with like, yeah, it makes it hard to know how to feel about Whitney, because part of this, like when she's talking, you're like, oh, yeah, that's true. Like, that's right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's not hurting anyone, you know, then the woman says, like, well, it hurts the business, which, like, is true. But she's like, yeah, it does come a place of hardship. Like, when you can't afford jeans, you buy jeans. Or, like, you know, there's an impulse to steal, to, you know, for any number of reasons why people steal. She's right. But it's also, I mean, she's creating a huge, you know, like the can of worms she's been actually opening with this mm-hmm. as well. Like, in terms of what I think is interesting, like, gosh, I feel like this is going to make me sound awful, but, like, you know, part of me is sitting there being like, what is stopping anybody then from this woman, like, even this woman stealing jeans and charging
or just buying anything with Whitney's credit card.
Right. Right. And then if you go to fire, it's like, but there's a double standard between, like, firing me and not, you know, going after the person who stole, you know. I just think it's like she creates this, like, just her instinct for there to be no problems here. It, like, yeah, it's a complete band-aid solution for, like, a totally systemic problem that is happening.
Right.
The joke of, like, those are really expensive jeans, you're going to pay for them all, is really funny. But the actual joke there that I think you've, like, pointed out to me is, like, that's a store that sells $200 pairs of jeans, and, like, in Espanol, you know, yeah.
Who needs those? Who can buy afford those jeans? Who needs those jeans?
People who move into the passive homes, right. Who have the money, yeah. So yeah, this is what. And then she's gonna go get her coffee. She's gonna notice that Fernando is still carrying his gun, even mm-hmm. as a coffee shop employee, which we don't really follow up on, but presumably we will in another episode. But yeah, this one is, you know, I was thinking earlier about whether or not so. One of the casting choices later is pretty interesting to me in terms of the doing. I wonder whether the show, you know, this is a wild example I'm going to pull out, but I feel like to some degree, like, South Park has always felt like they'll go after anybody. Like, if you are, like, you know, if there's and to a degree, like, obviously, like, Whitney and Asher are not, like, the complete stereotypical, like, left wing mm-hmm. of America, but there's a degree at which, like, they are showcasing these people who adopt, like, this is what Whitney is trying to be, right? It's like this, like, she's creating, you know, these economical homes. She's talking about, you know, it's like she's being, you know, against police here. She doesn't want to sell to Mark because he does have a Thin Blue Line sticker. And so how much of this commentary, and this is where I was kind of going earlier when I was talking about class and how the show mm-hmm. is about class, because I feel like there's a big difference between being left wing in quotations and being rich and being left wing and being, you know, not rich. You know,
yeah.
And so I wonder if the commentary, like, there is some commentary here on, like, people who at least perceive themselves to be left leaning or more liberal thinkers. But this has there's a complete class element to this that embodies Whitney and Asher.
There's definitely a class element to it. And I also think that it speaks to the fact that, like, politics is actually quite complicated. And I think that Asher and Whitney are left wing in this very, like, upper class and aesthetic way. Whereas, like, and the people that they want to represent, this whole idea that the governor of the Pueblo has about, like, romanticizing the native people, and in the way that Whitney also romanticizes people like Fernando as being like, oh, this is the community that I'm helping. The idea that people in those communities might actually carry guns, and they might be pro gun, and she's probably not. And that, you know, somebody who really believes in her sustainability vision might also be pro police. Like, and that, like, there's this this lack of tolerance with regards to Whitney for people who don't fully conform to the cultural aesthetic that she wants to build, which is almost more important than whether, oh, this is actually a poor person who needs your help, or this is actually somebody who can afford your home who also buys into the vision.
Right. Yeah, I was looking at gun laws in New Mexico, and they're pretty, license required for concealed carry on a handgun and vehicle carry. That's about all the yeses I'm seeing on the list. Like, it is a place where, like, gun law. So the idea that Fernando might legally within his, like, he's not doing anything illegal. I don't think the show is like, although maybe I presume he's not, unless he, for some reason, I don't know if he's a, anyway.
New Mexico is the Wild West. And I think I mentioned my sister lives there and has spent a little bit of time there. So I know there's, like, a very big, like, you know, when we meet Mark, like, this is very much a New Mexico type of guy. Like, there's a very independent streak. People want to be off the grid. They want to have their own protection in terms of, like, having fire. Like, and you see a lot of these contradictions that you might think of, like, between left and right, where people will hold complicated beliefs. And that's not just New Mexico. That's really everywhere. People are much more complicated than this binary kind of presentation that you might be led to believe. Like, I mean, you can find Trump supporters who would agree with a lot of things that, you know, liberal Democrats would agree with. Like, it's a, you know, the world is a very complicated place. But I also think, like, especially when you get outside of, like, you know, the kind of elite upper class, like, there's people who have a lot of kind of competing interests that might not always conform to the way that Whitney wants to see the world in terms of, like, oh, these are the good people that we want in our community.
I think the other thing, just to, like, pinpoint on this, so, like, I'm, you know, anybody who wants to, like, write me a message on Twitter, send me a DM, or message me on Discord, I'm open to hearing, like, because this is, like, where I get the most about, like, you know, wading into these waters. And I do love talking about it. And I'm a big, like, politics. I listen to, like, I got my, like, podcasting rap thing. It was, like, mostly news and politics. So my thing, but I think that the other piece too, just to, like, acknowledge it, is that I do feel a lot of pressure, and this is not to, like, put sympathy on me, but to feel like I have to have an answer of exactly what the show is trying to say about a thing. As we're, like, the fifth episode into a full run. And so these are my thoughts as I'm having them, as I'm watching the show, and where I believe, you know, what it's trying to tell us and what it might be trying to say. But of course I could be wrong. And then also I don't have the full context of the full show. So I just want to, like, acknowledge that. And I'm open to always hearing, like, other people's thoughts about what the show is trying to say or do. But I also, like, part of me is just to, like, say this on the right of, like, yeah, I don't fully know what it's trying to say yet.
Yeah.
I feel, this whole time I was, like, hoping. Sometimes, Amanda, you might find that you talk until you're like, oh, I found why I liked it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think I like that. And then I have to talk about why I liked it and figure out why I liked it. I don't know that I, like, in all of that, I figured out, like, how I feel about this yet. So yeah, just to put a point on that. All right. They do find a couple. They find, and in fact, Whitney wants to, like, pick out two different people and set them up as a couple and make a little family. There's a lady with a baby and a red hat. There's also this very handsome guy with long hair. He's with his girlfriend. She's also, don't point at me. It looks like I'm spying, which he is spying. So it's very funny. And then, they show up and, although they think that then the guy is like, oh, I actually want to go on. And someone's telling me I can't actually, I thought I was going to have to pretend to be in a couple with this lady who has a baby. Yeah.
And Whitney is so slimy here, because she's, like, telling Tanya, this production assistant, tell the man that we don't really want his girlfriend. We want him to pretend to be in a couple with the woman with the red hat and the baby.
Immediately. And who said that? Who's...
And then when Tanya tells Whitney, like, oh, I said they're not really comfortable with that. So Whitney goes over and talks to them, and immediately she, like, gives in and completely throws Tanya under the bus, like it was her idea. And then she tells Tanya that, like, that she tells them it's okay, but they have to, like, take the baby.
And then also before this, they talked to Kara is still there. And Kara says, did you know that you can make someone cry by blowing a menthol stick? And, like, yeah, there's all sorts of tricks you learn.
Is it Dougie the best?
Isn't he the best? Yeah, and she wants to know if Kara has signed the release on the artwork, which she has not yet done, but she says you'll get to it. I don't think.
And this is also, like, in the shuffle that they had completely misrepresented to Kara that they were not using her artwork in the show. They were only featuring it in their own home, private home. Right. But of course, they do want her artwork in the show.
Right. All right. So Whitney sees a truck pull up, and it turns out it's her parents. She says today is not a good day, which is very funny. I didn't realize that's the episode title is It's a Good Day. Did you notice the camera is really, as it, like, pans over, like, the camera, like, did it black out for you? This is what happened for me. It's like a period where it's like, black, we're like, eventually then we will see it from a distance,
right?
But this, the camera work on, like, her moving over to her parents is like, we're not supposed to fully see it, which I think is just like, not that like, I don't think in the world, like, it's supposed to be like, this is camera footage or whatever, but just this idea, it definitely, like, there's this, like, blackout moment when she first sees him. And then we cut to like a long shot.
Yeah.
Of them talking.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think I wonder if this is also like Dougie getting a shot of her parents, perhaps, because like we know that one thing that she's like, one of the reasons she freaks out when she sees them is that she doesn't even want people to know that she's related to her parents and that she very much does not want her development efforts to be associated with them.
Yes. So he wants to do some measurements because they're going to host a birthday party on this property, and Whitney makes them drive away. And she kind of freaks out and she's like, you know, I came back here because you said these could be my properties, but now you're planning parties on them. You're treating me like a child. And she tells them to leave. Do you get the impression that Whitney and Asher actually don't, there's a bunch of these properties that Whitney and Asher actually don't own and that her parents own, or
It sounded like, I mean, so I think that she probably built these houses and there weren't houses there, but it sounds like a lot of this, like, is their land that they already had, and that they've also, like, I mean, we did know that they took out loans from her parents. That's what.
And we know that Asher had, like, has bought, like, he went more to the auction.
Yes.
Like, he bought, you know, Cuesta Lane. And mm-hmm. so I do presume, but. Yeah, whether or not it's like the agreement was basically like whether, like, you know, is the like, so is it like her parents actually like literally like they're on the deed for the land and some of these homes as like a way to get started? Or did they give them the money? And there's this kind of presumption from her parents, like, we'll give you the money, but also like, yeah, we're going to want to like, you know, yeah, it's yours. And then later it's like, oh, that'd be a great spot for a party. Right. Like,
yeah.
Either one is like not great.
Yeah. The impression that I got is that like they probably own some land in Española and that their major operation is in Santa Fe. And that when they were trying to get Whitney to move back from California, they were like, well, you can get started on your own development thing and we'll get you started with a few properties. And then maybe they've bought more, but it sounds like it's almost entirely probably with their financial backing. But she flips into like full adolescent kind of defiant daughter mode here with them.
She's in Arrested Development here. She's like totally reverts to being a teenager in the back of the car of her parents, not wanting to do what they say.
I am a grown up. I am a grown woman. I have a very busy day.
Oh, yeah. I think this is really interesting. This is the most we get in terms of her parents here, but they were a piece of the first episode. So prominent for them to have been missing. Very prompt. I mean, mm-hmm. not as prominent
as not as could, prominent like, as some, but just but as, pretty, yeah,
it's what you do
put it between with your camera two pieces of bread and it's
yeah. So I like, you know, they haven't been around and you're like, you kind of like, oh yeah, yeah. And we know obviously there's like a lot of, you know, there's some there, but I thought mm-hmm. a good time to bring them back into the fold and sort of like just add another thing into the mix of like all of these tensions that as Whitney is in the middle of a horrific situation where she can't get anybody to actually buy the homes. The people that she wanted are not a good fit. She can't even find perfect fake families. Mm-hmm. And then her parents show up and are like, actually, we're going to throw a party here. And she doesn't want to be associated with her parents because it will ruin her reputation of not being a nepo baby, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get this tour. And Asher does make his haircut joke. The energy bill will be cheaper than his haircut. And then the woman nudges this man. And he starts singing, Stand By Me. And I have not been as uncomfortable as someone singing on a television screen since our boy Kendall Roy sang Out to the OG on Succession.
Wow. Not honesty. This
he didn't
was...
sing it in front of any. He was like basically only in front of.
Yeah. I love this. It's like these street cast people who want to be on reality TV. And it's like, this is my time to show off my singing talents.
Is it, did you ever have, I don't know if you did a kid, you're like, what if I was singing that a record label like found, you know, heard me. And also Stand By Me really got, because that is the song I would often sing at summer camp on the campfire. So I was like, this is extra embarrassing for me personally, but I feel in some way related. I feel a connection to this man who's just singing for no reason.
You were also trying to get discovered, Grace, when you sang Stand By Me at summer camp.
Yeah, I was like, maybe one of the campers' fathers is a record. Yeah, this is really awkward. And then I love when they just like, she finishes and then they're like, so, and then they break. And she's like, that was great. That was so great. Well, you know, and although they do not have the baby with them, although she does, it'll be so exciting when the three of us move into the home. She has her hand on, but then Whitney's like, let's do another take, no hand on the stomach. Maybe that didn't work. It was
This whole thing, it seems so fake too. It's like, this is not good TV, Grace. Like these, presuming that. Even if we leave in the Stand By Me, and if we take it out, I don't know which is better, but like, it's, they're just like, wow, I love this home. Oh, I can't wait. This is the perfect home. It's so boring.
You know, what's funny is I do watch a fair amount of HGTV, but only when I'm at my parents' house, when I'm home for the holidays. So I will be upcoming. I will give you the report when I'm home about how much TV I watch. Can I just say, like, the tension in those shows is not often that, like, throughout the course of the show, there's a few tropes of where you build tension into these shows. One is like, if someone's looking for a home and they're not sure which one, it's like the tension of like, this one does have a big backyard, but the bedroom's small, or like, you know, whatever, like whatever the thing. And so it's like, it's not quite right. Or when it's being renovated and it's like, you didn't know you had mold in the basement. That's going to cost you 10 grand. So we're going to have to cut back on the thing. Like, this is where the tension comes from. A show that's just perfect, like everybody finds their perfect home every single, like, I never knew I wanted this one perfect home. This is just a commercial,
right? Right. And that's all Whitney wants, like, and it's unclear like how the premise is going to work. So it's like, Dougie, you can kind of like sympathize that he knows that TV needs something. It needs conflict, it needs, you know, humor, it needs something. And like, Whitney is also like cheesing it up to the camera, like doing her faces like, come on with me.
So good.
But there's no show here. It really doesn't work. It's great.
Okay, Dougie and Kara, they're bonding, and this is my favorite part of, like, we just, our media on the joke, this, the punchlines are happening, which is, they're talking about, we'd call it Made in America, Native America, Emmy Award winning. Ronald Raven would be the president.
Very good. Very good.
Is very good. Yeah. And this is where Dougie's going to be like, yeah, how do you know Whitney? Like, you're friends with Whitney. And Kara's be like, oh, she said we were friends. She said that? Interesting. Interesting piece of information you've revealed to me, Dougie. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. And I love that Karen and Dougie are enjoying each other. This really tickled me.
Same. All right. Whitney and Asher, they're at a burger joint. They're like joking with the staff, but like, they're going to be on camera at some point. Asher is trying his Spanish, although he says something. And then he says, what does that mean? When they respond back to him, and they just say, oh, it just means enjoy your food. Tickled me greatly.
Yeah. Well, the thing that Asher was said to her was, I love food. Instead of saying, he meant to say, I love this food.
Well, you know, I love food.
I do too. I mean, hey.
Yeah. The bird. Yeah. I went to, do you guys have Five Guys is an American.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have Five Guys. I think it's like, I feel like it's originally from the Mid-Atlantic. I think maybe,
It's not super common here, but I was going to a movie theater that was near one, and I went and got it the other day, and boy, it's very,
it's good. It is very good. Yeah.
All right. So Asher said, there's a college girl. She's out. She's not going to buy the, all the people who are out.
Also, Whitney doesn't want the college girl either, because he doesn't want the impression that it's just like young college kids who are being financed by their rich parents, which Asher says, good one.
I thought you were being self-deprecating. She's like, no, it's very good. It's very fun. Even if there was a clone of Whitney who showed up, Whitney would be like, nah, not this one. She's not good. No. We can't sell her this home.
Yeah. Oh, it's so amazing. She lacks self-awareness. Also, Grace, I'm so dumb. I just realized that all of Asher's new comedy tips he's gotten from his corporate comedy class.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's the corporate comedy class. Yeah. Yes.
He knows. And that's where he learned that self-deprecating is funny.
Self-deprecation. Yeah. E.g., James Corden. Okay. Asher called Mark Rose, his broker, and he's still in to buy the house, and he'll actually buy it at the original offer, which is probably more than they would have got. And they can't be here till winter. And we get again, these moments that, I don't know who's writing this episode. I think most of these episodes are written by Benny Softee and Nathan Fielder. Mm-hmm. But this Instagram dive where Asher thinks that it's a defense of Mark and Whitney is not sold on this, which is he's at the protest of a conquistador statue. The indigenous woman is front and center, and it says it's a good day. Yeah. So Asher interprets this as like he's a good guy, and yes. He's like, no, this doesn't give it nearly enough context.
There was also militia there. Yeah. There was like a native protester who got killed on that day. So it's so they're both kind of seeing the Rorschach test of what they want to see in this Mark Rose character.
This episode also directed by Nathan Fielder. I just want to point that out. I'm looking up that they wrote it. He also directed it. It's so the Rorschach test of an Instagram post that's completely like it's the worst thing you can take as like an example of whether or not someone is a good human being or not is the like filtered thing that they put up on
but that's the only and that's the only thing that means anything to Whitney, and this is like why her kind of altruism, it's like this the Instagram activism, you know, like Whitney cares about this veneer so much but without looking at the actual impacts of what she's doing.
So good. It's so good. It's a good day. It's a all good right day. So they're going to meet Mark. He's going to see the house this time at night. He saw it in the daytime last time. This is Dean Cain.
I thought it looked like Dean Cain, but I didn't believe that it was actually Dean Cain. And it is really Dean Cain.
Yeah, it's in the credits. It's Dean Cain.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
He's great.
It's such an interesting choice for Dean Cain. So that's Mark. I love this. Whitney doesn't want to shake his hand. She's trying so hard to like make sure he knows she does not want him to buy the house. He doesn't like him. But he pushes through. He's like, I'll shake your hand. Okay. You know, you're sick, whatever. I don't mind. And then there's all of this time about like, I have the blue. I have the thing that's in support of the cops. I donate to the cops. I also donate to UNICEF and the World Wildlife Fund, you know? And like, then there's this brilliant moment about the Pueblo tribe.
Yeah.
The appeasement. And there's an awkward sign as they are waiting for what he will say next. And then he says, the government needs to pay the tribes for the roads. Like my grandma was Apache. Like, And then he gets super excited about the toilets and he'll need a minute.
This is a totally believable type of person who has these like contradictions that like has some values that align with being conservative, some values that would align more being like he cares about wildlife preservation, he donates to UNICEF, and like he loves the idea of being off of the grid, like outside of government surveillance. He probably like is a like maybe quasi survivalist type a guy, and he has the money to buy their homes, and it's like what they're in a business of selling these homes. Like they're not doing this for charity, so they need to find buyers. And this guy is not going to replace the stove. He's not going to install an AC. So what do you want, Whitney?
I think it's again. This is what I'm saying. Where like they're being a little. Rich and I are watching Yellowstone, which gets, I think, a lot of flack for being this like right wing show. Mm-hmm. And actually, when I've been watching that show, I actually find that what it's actually trying to do is like kind of present multiple of like, people who have, different viewpoints and even themselves own contradictory viewpoints. And I feel like that's a little bit what this show, what this character what it's doing. And it's less a commentary on him as a person and more so on Asher and Whitney, who like have to make a judgment about this man, right? Like this is Whitney's determination here is to figure out like, and it, you know, the like the piece about the appeasement, like, so if he said like, it's just she already knows she doesn't want to sell to him, so if he did come out and be like that, it's more proof to confirm her already beliefs, and it's only the fact that he says the opposite basically that like they need, you know, although it's an interesting thing where he's not like, he's saying like the government needs to pay them for the roads, which I don't know what like stance that is on like, whatever. But then she's like, she's confounded by it. So it's just a really interesting scene.
It's really interesting. And I like that. Like, it's like kind of, it's Whitney is, it's really fascinating to watch, especially in this episode, because in the last couple of episodes, because we see her, her the illusions, the illusory sort of world that she's built around her, the glass house, if you will, Grace, start to come down, because like she's been maintaining this kind of cognitive dissonance that she could be really successful, probably show her parents that she can be just as successful as they are, be well off, have this like perfectly curated Instagram life, and then also at the same time be doing good for the community and building a community that, like, this idea of reflection that kind of reflects that image that she wants to see. And you can't control the type of people that are in the community that you come to, the type of people who you attract to that community. You know, this is, so I think that she's starting to see this kind of fly by the wayside. And then at the same time of that, she's making a television show that, like, its whole reason to exist is to portray this image that she's been carefully curating for all of this time. So, yeah, I mean, I love the themes that the show is playing with. I think Emma Stone is like doing just a phenomenal job of making Whitney one of like the most captivating characters to watch.
Totally agree. So Asher asks if Whit's okay with doing this. She says, sure. Asher thinks he'll get along with the neighbors, and he celebrates. We sold the home. I love this. Asher says, are you still feeling sick? As if he thought that she was legitimately sick. He says again, are you upset about selling to Mark? She doesn't really say anything. He asks if he can open a window. And she says, if that's what you want. And he says, I want what you want.
Well.
And he gets into bed. He says, I love you. And she does say, I love you back. Mm-hmm. That's the end of the episode. Yeah. I like this because I think there's an idea that this, again, we talked a lot about their relationship and whether or not, like, does Whitney love Asher? And I do think she does. Like, the conflict of this episode, it, like, really, her, like, Asher is the one, like, you know, making sure that, like, they're actually able to sell the homes, which is, you know, it certainly is a thing that, like, Whitney, like, she says yes, basically, even if she does it, like, extremely passively and might not actually want to. Well,
it is a passive home.
It's actually a passive aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, like, there, you kind of can't fault Asher for pushing them to sell, because they need to sell the home. Like, he's doing this whole thing for her. The premise of this is that they're going to build these homes and people are going to buy them and live in them. So Asher is kind of doing like the only sensible thing in trying to make these sales. So I think it's like, and we're also seeing that Whitney is probably, you know, we can see all the ways that, you know, Asher needs a corporate comedy class and maybe he doesn't have very many friends. And, you know, there might be like, is Asher unlovable, might be a reasonable question, but Whitney is not that charming, doesn't have very many friends, and also might be unlovable. So the fact that they have each other, I think that they are, you know, that is meaningful, and he really is going along with trying to make her dream a reality.
I like the episode a lot. I think, as we talked about a lot, this is like a full-on Whitney character study, this episode, less so about almost anybody else, but it's a very good one. It's extremely compelling. I love the idea that over the course of this episode, we go from people that they think will be the perfect home buyers to essentially trying to create fictional home buyers, and they're not even working. That's not working, to the point where she has to sell to somebody.
To Superman.
To Superman himself. So I quite like it a lot. And I think it, you know, we talked about, you know, the show, you know, the idea of the show not getting picked up earlier. And that was an interesting place for there to be, like, you know, drama in the aftermath of that. Now the show has been picked up, but it's clearly not what I think anybody who's involved with the show maybe wants it to be. So that's kind of a fun place to be in. That being said, they are, I guess they're not technically cursed at the moment, right?
We didn't hear anything about the curse here. Like, we do hear again, like, Asher, you know, is monitoring Whitney's fertility, and she's at peak fertility. So there's this like whole question about, you know, whether they're going to have a baby and that sort of thing. I wonder if that's going to be woven into this theme of the curse. We know that Dougie has his like little artifact and he believes in curses. So we took a little break from direct discussion of curses, but we still have a few episodes to go, Gray. So I think that'll come back.
Well, I'm pretty excited. Yeah, we'll chat about it next week. The Fire Burns On is next week's episode. In the meantime, and where's your fire burning on? What are you up to? What are you talking about?
I'm talking with Ariel a couple times a week. We're rewatching 6 Feet Under season one, episode by episode, and we're almost done, Grace. I think we only have two episodes left. It's been so much fun. I'm going to miss it when it's over, but you can check that out and post your recaps. And as always, keep up with everything that I'm doing on Twitter, where I am at Dr. Amanda R.
I'm talking Fargo, the Crown, as well as Yellowstone season 3. They didn't announce it's coming back. We just have to watch 10 episodes in 3 weeks, but such is life here.
Wow.
Yeah, they're like trying to get it in before the February calendar kicks in, but they don't want to start it too soon in the new year. So runs for like 3 weeks, literally. Full spoiler recaps with Jess as well. I'm on social media at Hi From Grace. We'll be back next week to talk about episode 6 of The Curse. Until then, bye-bye.